Hello and welcome to another episode of, oh no, it's the Ranieri Brothers. With me here is my brother and co-host, Benjamin Ranieri of blonde hair. and of course, there's me.
Of no hair.
Thomas Ranieri of no hair. It used to be a luxurious mane. It was a luxurious mane.
It was awful.
I don't want to hear what anyone else has to say about it. Anyway, the topic of tonight's podcast is how to make your fortune by playing scratch-off lottery tickets.
Along those veins, idealism.
So, seriously, though, the topic of the podcast today is idealism, but not merely idealism in the sense of the kind of academic, very abstract way, but idealism in the sense of how one practices ideals in their own life, or how one, I guess, reconciles oneself to one's ideals, because the fact is that ideals are often statements of belief we fall short of. Right. So the reason this comes up is because in an earlier conversation with my brother off of the microphone, which we actually do have, he had said that he was a practical idealist
or a realistic idealist.
Excuse me, a realistic idealist. And to me, that sounded like gobbledygook. And I wanted to pull it apart, but I didn't think it was fair to just pick on his idealism. I thought I should also, of course, I need to open myself up to the same criticism. Otherwise, this isn't valuable conversation. And then I also thought I might pick on some of my other friends who aren't present in the room. You know, first is, you know, just kind of a flex, but also because I think it'll be fun.
You don't like, you want to pick on everyone's idealism.
Well, sometimes fair enough. Yeah. I mean, I guess you could say that I'm a non-idealist.
Skeptic.
You say I'm a skeptic?
Maybe. Yeah.
What is that? Well, I'd love to know what that means. I'm skeptical of that term.
It's funny too, because I have these, you know, this will be an interesting conversation on my side, because I never really defined these terms for myself in my head.
It was just the beginning of wisdom.
Yes. Thank you, Tom. Actually, technically, that's not the beginning of wisdom. The beginning of the wisdom is understanding you're not wise. And then you move on.
Okay.
Right. So what do you want to argue about that next?
No, it wasn't an argument. I was going to make a joke, but I decided not to go.
Good. I do not have blonde hair. First and foremost.
That's more strawberry blonde.
You're such a...
Wavy locks that go down. It looks like Fabio.
Wait, Fabio has brown hair.
No, he has blonde hair.
Oh, you know, you're right.
He's probably dying it, but still blonde.
Yeah, that's what I assume. Or either that, if man has no stress.
God bless him.
Yes, I understand that I should always be able to define it and be able to state what it is, and I'll probably try and create it like on the cuff here, but I'm going to be open and honest and just, you know, be clear that these aren't things that I've clearly defined for myself. It's more of an understanding I have of what they are based off of many conversations since I was a kid onward, and not like a textbook definition. So I have a semi understanding of what it is.
Well, I think, you know, there's the textbook understanding, but I don't want this to be pedagogical. Like, I don't want to be like, okay, Ben, here's what this thing is, you know, and so now you have to conform to like this standard that I've set, which may or may not be accurate, because I think there's value in the old Greek way of doing things. I mean, we can have an understanding of how people have defined these things in the past, but we have to treat them with the same amount of skepticism, yeah, as anyone else's, because they're, you know, no more or less valuable. And really it's about what's persuasive, and so then the question then becomes, well, then how do you distinguish about which of these things? This is how I think about it, at least. Yeah. Like, how do I say, like, which one of these is valid and which one of these isn't? Okay, well, I'm going to observe reality. and see which one has the result that you would expect or would want from that thing.
Yeah.
And then be like, okay, well, then that definition seems to encapsulate how this thing acts. Because it really, it, you know, if you lose sight of the fact that definitions, again, are symbols made up of symbols that attach to a real phenomena, the first thing that you have to kind of grapple with is what the phenomena is. Mm-hmm. And then and when you understand what the phenomena is, just like what the shape of it is, then you can be like, okay, well, this definition seems to fit. This definition doesn't seem to fit. But if you try to go from definition to phenomena, then you're going to make the phenomena fit into your definition. And that's no good.
Fair enough. That was confusing, but I followed it, but it was I definitely started nodding off there for a bit. The
sure that you and the rest of the audience would agree.
part of this is going to be interesting because I think there's obviously schools of thought when it comes to whether it be skeptic or skepticism, idealism, realism. You know, et cetera, and they go forward. I always, and maybe this is wrong, or maybe this is just a subcategory of all of those. I've always considered all of those aspects like kind of like personality. Like you have all of them in you. You just tend towards some more. And so, like at my core, and this is why I call myself, you know, a realistic idealist. In my core, I'm an idealist. I hope for the best. I try to live up to certain ideals that, you know, like chivalry and Catholicism and the like. But I'm also in the world and I have realistic ideals of people. And those are far less than what I believe the ideal should be. And so I have to live practically while also hoping and holding my ideals above. And so I have both. And then, of course, in certain instances, and especially like politics, a skeptic. And so I see that I can be, you know, all of these things. I just tend towards certain ones more. So that's a thought.
Well, that is a thought. It's several thoughts strung together.
True. There's definitely more than one thought.
There was more than one word. So,
cabbage,
insightful. thank you. You got me thinking about Monty Python. Hold on. So what I would want to say, well, first of all, I'm not certain that's what idealism is. I mean, it just sounds to me like you have an impulse to try and express your internal disposition in the most beneficial way to yourself and those around you for the greater glory of God, which is, I think, different than idealism. Idealism is a statement of essentially like, idealism goes part and parcel with what we call an intentional regime, or a regime that believes that, or people that believe that they can kind of create a utopia or create a government, and that society develops through, you know, scientific principles, more or less, through just the application. Well, if we do this, then this will result, and then we'll get to this other result. And again, that's just all ass backwards. You know, ultimately, I think the question you should ask is, you know, we're meat. We're people, and I think we were talking about this in the last podcast briefly, but, you know, we work in meat space. That's the place where, you know, we work through our mission in life, whatever God has, you know, given us to do. And so then these ideals don't really have much meaning unless they express themselves in principle, excuse me, in action, you know, in human action. And human action has a specific limitation as regards scope. You know, like, God wouldn't ask us to rearrange the cosmos. It's beyond our capability to do so. And to believe that we could one day become the kind of person who could modify the cosmos in the way that God modifies the cosmos, obviously, cosmos is the height of arrogance. And I think that is essentially what a lot of people believe, is that we can work ourselves up to that place by reaching for these ideals.
Yeah, but all right. So, but if you take that, if you take the idea of, let's extricate the, you know, what you just said from that idea of utopia. Let's take instead, you know, I'm working towards an ideal, and working towards this ideal is the kingdom of God on earth. All right. Which I am trying to do.
What does that mean?
I could get into that. Should I get into that right now?
Well, you just said that's the basis of your ideal.
That's not what we're talking about right now. So like, all right, listen, if we want to go into that, that's fine. But let me finish this thought first.
Do as you
please. Where, so if I'm working for the, you know, the kingdom of God on earth, understanding that almost certainly it will not come, at least not in my lifetime. But you know, that is what I'm working towards, with the understanding that there are, you know, that through realism, or, you know, being realistic of one, I'm not going to reach that. It's not going to be me in a vacuum or humans in a vacuum. It's going to be in cooperation with God. We'll probably, you know, fail for the most part. And that there's all of these things that are still have to be done, practically speaking, in the world in the meantime as well. So that's a mix of that whole being realistic, but also striving for the ideal.
So that's a lot of really nice sounding things. But the issue here is,
it's not about nice sounding things. I'm actually getting this idea of idealism being fully tied to this utopia. All right. Because the utopia that you're talking about, which I understand, you know, is not, you know, that, you know, the communists are trying to go, the progressives are trying to do. That's obvious rubbish, BS, fully, and it's fully on man to make it, and that'll never exist without God on, like, without Christ's second coming, God on earth, you know, as king here.
You heard it here first, folks. Jesus Christ is a communist.
Okay. See, this is going to be just like that rugby and soup kitchen thing, where you guys are talking about bringing people from soup kitchen and teaching them rugby, which is not what I said. I said there's two different ideas entirely.
But the lie was really funny.
The lie was funny for everyone but me. Jerk. And now I'm off my topic.
The question I asked you was, what does this end state you're talking about look like?
Well, I don't see how that has to do with, you know, how we are defining or considering idealism.
Well, I mean, I feel like it's important, because if you hold ideals to reach an end point,
yeah,
then I feel like it's not unfair of me to ask you what that end point is, because what if the ideas you hold are extrapolated from the end point? If they're extrapolated from the end point, what I actually need to understand is the end point, because your ideals are contingent on that endpoint.
Sure, but the topic of conversation is the, you know, the word and philosophy of idealism itself, not...
I'm suggesting to you that what you think your ideals are not actually your ideals, but your end state are actually your ideals. And then if that's the case, then I need to evaluate that end state as your ultimate statement of idealism. You know what? Actually, we're asked backwards on this.
Okay.
We need to stop.
Okay.
And ask, what's idealism?
That's right. I was asking you if I could do this. Like, if I could extricate, if idealism, because the way you defined it was specifically tied to a scientific progressive ideal of utopia.
I was using that as an example.
Oh, yes. It seemed like that's how you were defining it. It seemed like you were tying idealism, to that, and that's what idealism was.
No. I'm sorry.
Hence why I was talking about, we don't need to talk about my end state, because can we extricate the word idealism from scientific utopia?
Right. I may have Okay, fair enough.
Okay.
I think that I made a mistake somewhere along the line there. Because I started thinking like, well, what's the difference? I started getting a little bit lost in my own thoughts, I guess.
Sure. In the weeds.
In the weeds, just so. So instead, let's put it to you. Let's put it to you this way. I mean, there have been a lot of different people who talk about idealism in a lot of different ways. Kant is kind of the person who, you know, philosophically speaking, started idealism. And idealism is specific, and perhaps this is my fault for thinking of it in these Kantian terms.
Right.
But when I hear idealism and I think about what people who went to university and studied philosophy or, you know, because postmodern politics still, they study the old stuff.
Yeah, I know. I've studied modern philosophers.
And so a lot of them is based on Kant.
Yeah.
And the Kantian theory is that there's these a priori ideals that exist.
Beforehand, right. The natural state.
Right, before the natural state.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So therefore, what it means is that, again, when I say I don't understand it, I don't mean that I didn't comprehend it when I read it, but that it's incoherent nonsense.
Yes, very dumb.
But he also believed in that categorical imperative where there would be this miraculous change and everyone would be on this new page, right? Very similar to like the new socialist man that was preached by the communists. Just like, and then it's like the underpants gnomes, right? And then something happens and we have full communism. So that is specifically what I mean when I say idealism. This is Kantian idea of, like, for instance, when you go out there and the leftists are like, well, these are rights. You know, they have a right to be heard. They have a right to be. And you ask, well, why? And it's like, well, because they exist. Well, why do they exist? Well, because they existed before time. It's ultimately religious,
right?
But in its assertion, which is why I think it's an unsustainable model. But so when someone tells me they're an idealist, and I'm like, I don't think you actually are an idealist. I just think you think that means something different than what it means philosophically speaking, at least.
That's interesting. Right, and remember, everyone, that I don't research or prepare for any of this beforehand. So like, I'm not looking stuff up on Webster. Merriam-Webster or anything. So if you guys went straight there and know this, and this is a dumb conversation to you, I'm sorry. Small tangent or digression, just because this was fun. I was at a wedding recently, and my modern philosopher was there. He was helping actually cook.
Was it the wedding that I was at?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so yeah. There was the wedding that we went to.
Right, but I didn't know. Okay, yes, the wedding we went to. My modern philosopher teacher, modern philosophy teacher, was there, and we were cracking up about the modern philosophers and their you know, ridiculousness, and but like, we both were like, well, I said this and he completely agreed that the closest to truth of the modern philosophers was the one who is mocked and derided the most, Leibniz, because he had his whole monad theory, and the monads were basically, and we just completely was mocked at Kingdom Come. And the thing that most closely resembles, you know, monad today is the atom. And so, and it was the basis of all of the things. And it was just like, and then apparently he actually came close to converting at one point. That I learned then at that time, but he didn't go the whole way. But we were just laughing about that. You brought modern philosophy in.
It's cool, man.
So, yeah. So, small digression.
Well, no, it's a useful color, certainly. Well, I found that the philosophers that are mocked by the people that are celebrated most, right, at least in our current system, often have the most wisdom. And so you've often made fun of me because I'll be like, oh, have you read this book by this guy? And you'll be like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And it's like, well, he's a big... Among people who aren't brainwashed, he's really important, you know, because he's Burnham is a name that comes to mind. And so I love that. That's Leibniz. That's that good old fashioned dissonant name dropping. Like, oh, who's Leibniz? I mean, another guy is who's actually very in line with our way of thinking about things. Or perhaps I should put it to you this way. I'm in line with his way of thinking. Of thinking about things.
You're not even drinking.
Is, yeah, is Isaac Newton. He was surprisingly insightful on metaphysics.
Interesting. I don't know if I've read anything of his on metaphysics.
Yeah.
Just the science.
Like, in fact, like, he's the one who posits, and this is my belief now, because he encapsulates what I was already thinking but couldn't quite express, is this idea of having to and this is something that a lot of people thought at the time and had thought through the medieval ages, was that you have to read the book of the word and the book of nature together. And to, as a lawyer, to me, like, that really changes the way I'm supposed to look at the world. Because, and I, now I'm just realizing that it would, me saying that would doesn't have the same impact on you emotionally and mentally as it would have on me. Because when, like, you have to read a contract together, what it means is you have to take every part of that contract to the letter and then compare it. And then you have to figure out what happens when there's an ambiguity on one or both of the contracts and how to achieve the ends of those contracts, both of the contracts' ends, because they're read together. They're more like one big contract, two sides of one big contract. But it's just difficult when there's conflicting provisions, but or ambiguous provisions that would seem to possibly contradict, all of which is ripe for you know, litigation. But reading the book of the word and the book of nature together, in my mind, solves a lot of problems.
Well, so there was a time in which you were doing this, except you were not as coherent about it at the time. It was late.
And plus, I mean, I was still working on the idea. I mean, a lot of times I'll say stuff in here and be like, I did not express that well. And then I'll think it a lot about.
This was like a year ago.
You mean, yeah, any conversation?
No, it was like a year ago. And it was late. And we were in our cups. I'm hesitant to go down this path with you because it was a long path the last time.
I'm mentioning it as an idea.
We don't have to. Well, no. But like the obvious question that not just me, but everyone else is going to be wondering, what the hell are you talking about Book of the Word and what the hell are you talking about Book of Nature? Now, I would posit, I would assume Book of the Word is, you know, the Bible or, you know, the Bible.
Yeah,
The Bible. Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. Good. Done.
Right.
But then remember the last time Book of Nature became a little all over the place. You said it was an actual physical book. Yep, you did.
Oh, wait. Then I
told you, here comes.
Okay. Let's not talk about that. It's not an actual physical book. I don't know if I was messing with you or confused or what, but or making a bad joke, but. No, it's not a book. The Book of Nature basically means, like, again, phenomenology may be the best way of putting it. Just like, you know, like the you know, when you, for instance, like if you can, we see evidence of things like microevolution.
Therefore, yeah, absolutely.
If you can see evidence of something, it's pretty dumb for you to deny that it exists.
Right? So nature and nature via scientific method.
Yeah, I mean, that can, we would have to get into more or less. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
And also, but also, like, so if that's the case and we see things like animals creating their own borders, right, where you have packs of wolves and they have strictly delineated areas in the forest that they won't cross.
Yeah.
Because they have territories that they run in. Well, okay. Then we can extrapolate from that mammals, some mammals have territorial things. Well, let's look at some other mammals. Well, you see that not only mammals do it, birds have territories. You know, rats have territory. All these different animals set a certain grid as a spontaneous organizational method. So then when I hear a human being say something like borders are unnatural or borders are wrong, I have to say to myself, well, if every animal does this, or most animals do this, and the animals that are most like me do this, and I have the instinct to do this, and having a border doesn't contradict any law of God that I can see, then I have a right to have borders and, like an animal, defend it with physical force. And that, to me, that's me reading the book of nature and the book of nature, meaning observable behaviors of animals similar to us.
Or natural things.
Because God made us to be animals, and if we're animals, we should act in an animal way, but in an animal way that is most like moving towards God.
Right.
Because we can only move more towards God in an animal way because that's what we are.
An animal made in the image of God.
An animal, right, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And with a divine spark that allows us to actually do this ascension.
Well, hence the image of God.
Right, right. Right. Perfect. Right. Great. Yeah. So, like, then there's like, well, how do you justify, you know, killing someone in defense of yourself? Well, you know, it seems like the law of the jungle is, you know, when you get to that point where there are no rules and there are no laws, it's if you eat or be eaten, it's better not to be eaten.
Well, that, and there is also, I mean, my thing would be, you know, first look at the book of the word before you even go to the book of nature. If it's already handled and solved in the book of the word, then there's no reason to have to go to the book of nature. Because obviously God's word is over and above, you know, even his created beings, you know, creator over creature. So self-defense is handled in the Ten Commandments. And, you know, and then, yeah, I mean, technically it's the book of the word, but like God put borders on Israel. And borders have been a man-made thing for thousands and thousands of years. Et cetera. And then you can, and to bolster that, you could even, you know, bring in the book of nature to even further, you know, even further determine.
Well, we have to do that because at least from my,
yeah, because paradigm, a lot of people won't,
because you have to read them together. Like I said, so you have to account for both nature and the word. And the thing about it is like, there's even in a hierarchy of interpretation. Again, I'm realizing all this information is not something that you normally think about. And so I've been assuming way too much. I realized, you know, when I'm explaining things, but in the event that you're reading two contracts together, two provisions that more or less say the same thing mean that this is a really strong argument for this being the case. So like the borders thing. Well, there were borders. And at no point did Jesus say, oh, that whole border thing, by the way, stop doing that. Right. Never even touched it. So there's Jesus saying yes. And then we see wolves and deers and all these other people. So then it's like, okay, well, then this just sort of is what it is. Like, this is not something we should really argue about or question. This is like a foundational or elementary sort of aspect of our existence. So there's no good faith reason to question this. But if they're like, since this is a conflict or an ambiguity, as I said, then it gets a little more messy. But so there's that aspect to it. And the other aspect to it is that I forgot what it was. Hopefully I'll come back.
Well, we can have that conversation about later, especially because I don't believe there is, I don't think it's possible to have a conflict between your book of the word and book of nature.
No. I'm not saying that there is one. I'm saying that there
could be perceived conflict.
Exactly. Okay. And you need to be able to resolve it in order for people to feel comfortable with your moral argument. A lot of this has to do with, I mean, I could be satisfied with an answer, right?
Yeah.
That someone else wouldn't be satisfied with, a lot of times because of a defect, or sin or whatever. But I'm subject to those same default. So what am I supposed to say about it?
Wow. And that's as humble as he gets, folks.
fair enough. Come one and come all, right? So that backhanded compliment really knocked me out.
Well, we're getting cut off of idealism here by like a lot.
Idealism is hard to talk about.
You're the one who picked the topic.
I didn't know it was going to be hard to talk about until we started talking about it.
Well, so, I mean, all right. So going back, so here's my thing about idealism. Like, yes, I understand. Kant was the creator of the idea of idealism.
Philosophical definition of idealism. Right.
Whereas that's fine, but the word, if you take ideal and you take that word, you throw up an ism of belief and a way of life that has to do with your, you know, an ideal. Like, I don't need Kant to be able to determine what idealism looks like for me. I do think I have to differentiate. Like, you're not wrong. If I ever have to do it, you know, tell somebody that I'm an idealist again, I'll probably say, but not in the way that Kant defines it, but just in that I'm striving for these certain ideals, with the understanding that, you know, I probably won't ever reach them.
Right. I mean, to me, that just sounds like a desire for self-improvement. Idealism.
It's not just self-improvement. I'm actively working to build the world in such a way.
Yeah, right. But again, idealism is when you believe something that, to my mind, again, is somehow contradictory to reality, or how reality works. So, like, I was at the school board meeting, and some woman got up to give a long-winded talk that, again, meant nothing. She's using words that she clearly doesn't understand. And really, what she's saying is, you should give me what I want because I want it and I need it. And so do it. Right. And so, I mean, that's the only way I could hear it. So, you know, later on, I go outside and they want to argue with me about all this nonsense. It's like, so you don't believe children have a right to be loved, or, you know, deserve to be loved. And I'm like, the problem is that it's not that that is even untrue. I mean, we could question that quite, like, what does it mean to have a right? Yeah. What does it mean to have a right to be loved? Does that mean I have to love the child? Or does that mean that he has a right to be loved by you specifically? I mean, it's just really undefined.
Yeah.
And so I can't universally agree to it because I don't know what the consequences of that is. Because if I take it in the largest definition, what you're saying is the world has to stop if my child's unhappy. And that's not good for the world. Or the child.
Well, you remember what our old headmaster used to say? Well, my old headmaster.
Is it Clark?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, the children. And you talk on it all the time about how everyone will just completely subject people to horrors and evils and bad policy and process for the sake of what they call the children. Really that hurts them.
Right, and the children aren't actual children.
Right, it's their idea of children.
But it's the image of children they hold in their minds.
My biggest problem with that lady would be like, all right, how are you defining love? Because here's the thing, is that every time, like, I agree with you, they don't have an understanding of nobody. Very few people have an understanding of what a right is. And I remember this because I didn't have a very good idea. And then several years ago, you and I were driving, and we were having that conversation. And like, I ultimately agreed with 90% of what you said, but I did say that, you know, that there are certain rights given by God. And we don't have to jump into that. But here's something that no progressive or leftist understands what love is. Love is willing the good of another, even if it seems unpleasant at the time. It's their good. All right. Doesn't mean give them chocolate. It means they don't get chocolate. They go brush their teeth and go to bed. It doesn't mean that you let them quit running. No, you finish your lap because that's what's best for you. Sometimes, you know, it is harder to do, you know, it's sometimes out of love, you have to make your kids do hard things, or you have to be hard on your kids. But they conflate love with
indulgence
and comfort, and it's destructive and evil. And so, like, they say, oh, you don't think they have a right to be loved? Like, oh, really? Let's say I do. I think what I'm going to do is more loving than what you're going to do. Yes, it takes away this and that and the other thing, but they're all going to be better, and you're all going to be better teachers or whatever. Because you're going to do more with less because you didn't need that stuff to begin with. Because they have no idea what love is.
Well, exactly. That's the problem, is they're just, and I realized it afterwards. Like, one of the guys, I said, can you define a right? And he goes, yeah, well, there's constitutional rights. There's human rights. It's not a definition. You're just
giving examples.
Bad examples. Please just tell me what a right is. He couldn't do it. Of course he couldn't do it, because he doesn't know. What a right is in his mind is stuff that you have to give me. stuff that I need to be protected with. This is my stuff. And it means I can do what I want. And another point, they're like, so you just don't want to pay your taxes. No, I don't. Not if it's going to like subsidize something I don't believe in any more than you would want to. You never will, because
you're sheeple.
And
that at charity, they're sheeple. That's the nicest thing I think we can say right now. Right.
Anyway.
Right.
One of them even, and then immediately after telling me that and me being like, well, that's not a right. I was like, that's not a definition of a right. He's like, well, then you should learn how to be more eloquent. And I was like,
could you ask him to define eloquent?
No, I didn't. I was like, I'm sorry. You are saying I need to be more eloquent?
You should have asked him to define eloquent.
Well, he didn't use it properly, certainly.
Exactly. I was like, because he doesn't know what the word means. Yeah. You should be more eloquent, aka you should be patient. I guess.
No. He was saying I should be more precise, I think is what he was trying to get at.
Okay.
Like, I hadn't defined right well enough. Well, this goober couldn't
define it at all.
Define it at all. He'd be like, well, there's rights, and then there's like other rights from other places too. Duh. You know, and it's just like, well, what's the point of even engaging in this nonsense? Like, why would I talk to you? You don't understand the words you're using. How am I supposed to talk to you?
We're not doing the rant show. You should do a podcast though, where it's just 5 minutes. 5 minutes, you ranting, and then stop the show.
We could call it Thomas Fenieri Does Lewis Black,
or we could call it you know, Thomas Fenieri's Outlet Time. And it'll just, I mean, you'll be kicked off like YouTube so quick, but it'll be great.
So like Razor Fist then.
Oh, is he kicked off?
He's not kicked off, but he does rants.
Yeah, but 5 minutes, just whatever you're dealing with at the time. It's just like, I just, you know, put yourself out there for that.
I mean, I suppose I could show the world my rage.
I think you'd have quite a following. You'd have to edit it though, because there's no way you're going to say everything. You don't want to get FBI'd.
I wouldn't do that, but it will be curse laden.
Well, yes. I suppose you can put on the mature portion of YouTube. So idealism. Okay. So I still haven't heard really an argument from you, just like where my view, or at least my semi-working definition of idealism, is incorrect. You have some vague feeling that it needs to be more Kantian.
No, what I feel like I've shown is that what you call idealism isn't in fact idealism, and it's
based off of idealists that you know
about. No, I mean, based on it's not the Kantian definition of idealism, and you've come up with some personal, internal definition to help you do the right thing. Well, and there's no reason for me to like meddle with that.
Okay, wait, out of curiosity, all right, and this is an honest question, and it might not be the case. So the word ideal has its own definition, right?
Yes.
Okay. And, you know, yeah, throw an ism at the end of something and it is a, you know, a philosophical belief system, you know, basically, right?
No, I don't know if I agree with that.
Fine. Help me with ism. That's kind of always how I've understood.
Ism specifically means an internal set of, what's the word I'm looking for? An ism is basically a belief system.
Okay.
An internal belief system based on philosophical principles.
Okay.
Any kind of principles, really, I think.
Fair enough. I was going to go that route, but I hedged, so I probably shouldn't have.
So an ideal, define ideal. Yeah. The first is, in mathematics, an ideal number. Two, that which only exists... Excuse me, that which exists only in idea, a conception that exceeds reality.
Right. I was not going to take that version.
An imaginary object or individual in which an idea is conceived to be completely realized, hence a standard or model of perfection as the ideal of beauty, virtue, Bayard, the idea of chivalry.
Right.
So
that's kind of where I was going.
All right. So again, look at, how about you're a medieval idealist?
Sure.
Because this just sounds to me like trying to live up to the perfection of the spirit of a thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Right. Well, great. Now I understand that. But, you know, so great. We've discovered something.
Yeah. Like, so I feel like the idea or the political, sorry, not political, shoot, keep doing that. The philosophical notion of idealism or of ideals, I guess, would have been existing well before Kant. And he just created his own version of it.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that, you know, ideal and idealism has a specific meaning in today's academy and philosophical community, yeah, which controls more or less the intellectual thinking. So if I have to take the word as they mean it and is how it's commonly understood today, not as someone may have understood it in the past, unless that is specifically pointed out to me.
Gotcha. Okay, well, I mean, and that's fair. I didn't think. Yeah, it's been a while since I took modern philosophy. And kind of forgot that it was Kant that did it all. But I understand what you're saying, and practically speaking, that makes sense. That's true, and I get it. But that's why I said, based off this conversation, I will have to add like qualifiers to right. to my.
So here's the issue with using idealism, because this is what I think of when I just pulled up the definition for our convenience, but. I think it's actually better to talk about it first before you look at the definition, because you can kind of straighten out some things, and then you look at the definition and you're like, oh, well, that's why that's there.
100%.
So there's three, but the only one that's pertinent is, well, I mean, I suppose I'll just read all three.
Since no, just read the pertinent one.
Okay. The system or theory that denies the existence of material bodies and teaches that we have no rational grounds to believe in the reality of anything but issues in their relations.
Huh. All right.
And so that basically, I mean, that's a really foofy way of basically saying, like, it turns reality into, it idealizes reality, or it symbolizes reality, that reality is actually existence only in symbols. And so therefore, if you just move the symbols in the right way, or the right. ideals in the right way, you'll get a different outcome. And that's obviously insane to me, but that's also the basis of our public policy.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons things are going off the tracks, which is why I get all bristly when people say they're an idealist, because I'm like, I do not think that word means what you think it means.
Hey, that's going to be two episodes in a row we did a Princess Bride reference. Because at the very end of the last episode, I did.
You did, and I left it in too.
I know you did. Thank you.
Yeah.
Have fun storming the castle. Yeah. Okay, well, and but that's okay. But that actually kind of lends itself to, well, I believe it lends itself a little bit more towards my side of thinking, because if yes, you have the academic version and the part that's taught in colleges now, which is the idealism that you just defined, but then you have what most people mean when they say idealism, which I think is probably closer to my thought process.
So, well, I don't know if that's true, but
hold on. Go ahead.
I don't know if that the most people thing is true.
Most people, you, yeah,
but I do think that what you're talking about doing is living up to your ideals, and I'm all about living up to your ideals. Idealism carries a whole lot of intellectual baggage that ideals don't. So like so this is a great example of this is the, and this is, we're going to get into the nerdy portion of the podcast.
Dude, we've hit that like eight times.
But the, sure. But in the Stormlight Archives.
Oh, that the, type of nerd.
The,
gotcha.
right, exactly. The Knights of Radiance gain in power as they embody, right, where they overcome obviously a problem in themselves by encapsulating or holding on to an ideal or a principle, and then trying to live up to that ideal as a way of healing their own brokenness.
Yeah,
at least in part. Beautiful. I love it. It's perfect. It's amazing. that's living up to your ideals. And I think people conflate idealism, which has been turned. And this is the problem. Sorry, hold on. So people conflate idealism with that kind of idealism where you're trying to embody the best of what you can aspire to as a human being. But the problem is that the left and the progressives, because they don't believe in everything, again, everything's very symbolic. So if you move them around, you can get different results. So that means that they change the name of, or the word of what how idealism means. And then that gradually changes the way people think about it. And they actually conflate the ideas. So it's the same thing happened with white supremacy. White supremacy used to be that white should be like the kind of Nazi thing where whites should be the master race of the entire world. And now they've expanded that thing slowly over to mean that if whites are a majority in their own country, it's a racist thing. So if you pass a policy that prevents your country from becoming our country from becoming a minority majority, that's white supremacy because you're actively stopping brown people from having more votes than white people. And that's insane. And so if we're going to think clearly, we have to be really clear, and they benefit just like hell benefits.
Yeah.
When we don't have from chaos, and chaos comes from non-enforced, not willing to be enforced boundaries and definitions in the way that we think and pinning them down so that we actually have a full understanding and can, you know, we work better when we think better. Right. And we produce better when we think better, not just better trinkets, but better love, better families, better happiness. You work, you know, you do works better when you're thinking more clearly. And thinking clearly means conforming your mind to reality. So if an ideal gets in the way of that, meaning I can't conform to reality because that makes me feel like I'm breaking some preconceived ideal or belief, well, then that means there's a problem with your preconceived or ideal or belief.
Which is why I'm a realistic idealist.
So, but you're not an idealist, is my point. I had this long talk about how you can't do it that way. You got to do it my way. And you're like, I'm just going to do it my way anyway, even though I heed your warning. Yes, Satan profits from chaos, and I opt for chaos because my brother encouraged me not to.
No, I wait.
That's what just Ben joined the ranks of hell. That's the name of this episode.
I really hope
Jesus
that.
Is a communist, and Ben says Ben, the agent of hell.
The annoying thing is that. You're definitely putting that into the description. No, you gave me, you affirmed my medieval idealism. And so that, I can still hold that idealism. And then if there's aspects of my idealism that do not conform to reality, I shift and recorrect my ideal.
My point is you're not going to retake that word from them. So you
I already have.
No, you have.
It's my bloody word.
Okay, great. So this works for you, but how are you going to, you talked this big game last time about wanting to like, and then the beginning of this podcast about bringing the kingdom of God down to earth. And
I'm not talking big game. I'm doing my little part to do it.
I'm saying you were really confident about what you want to do.
Yeah,
right.
I can do that right. I'm allowed to make
fun of you a little bit. All right, just hold on.
I don't think you are. I don't think you have a right to make fun of me.
I have a very specific definition of right, and it is there's no nothing to like how other people look at it. So I'm not even gonna get into that.
Well, I mean, you could if it's a definition, then it's like one or two sentences. Just you can just say it, and we don't have to talk about it. Just get it out there, because I'm sure everyone's dying to know.
Right? No, exactly. So, in line with what I was talking about, you know, having to read the Book of the God and the Book of Nature together, a right is in essence right action. That is action that is you can't blame someone from doing it. Is it helping or hurting? Is it making things better or worse? And if it's tending to make things better, you have a right, meaning you are correct in doing it.
Did you need to be more eloquent?
I need to be more eloquent.
Can you at some point maybe write it down and have like a really good, crisp definition?
I'm working on stuff like
that. Okay. All right. I'm not even making fun of you. Encouraging it.
I believe in aphorisms. I like aphorisms.
Cool. I don't know what that means.
The short statements of observations.
Fair enough. I think we're done.
No, you were yelling at me about idealism, and then I had some amazing comeback.
No, you know. Right, yeah. Well, all right, listen, it wasn't an amazing comeback. No,
I didn't have a chance to say it.
I know, because here's the thing. You're talking about here's the me. Thing.
I interrupted you.
I did.
And I'm going to do it again, so you don't have a chance to say it.
Exactly. 100% true. Also, I didn't talk a big game. I'm doing a small part. Don't be a jackass.
Okay,
go ahead.
You talk this small game.
You're such a dick.
About being some small part, like a porta potty of heaven.
You sure?
Just for those who don't have the video feed that doesn't exist, he just blew beer out his nose.
It was out my nose. It was out my mouth, all over myself. I don't think I'm gonna drink until this episode's over now.
Anyway, I just can't remember what I was gonna say.
Ben, you are right.
Oh, I don't think
I know you can't do that.
I don't think I'm ever gonna be able to say that.
Oh, no, you have, actually.
No. Yeah. Will you play along? I made a joke, make jokes, you joke back.
We've been joking.
You're a joke.
I'm gonna
repeat, speaking of jokes, did you see the trailer for the new Joker movie with
I did actually.
And it looks intriguing.
No, it looks really good. I didn't see the first one.
You see the Joaquin Phoenix Joker?
No, I haven't seen it. It looks so dark. I feel like I have to be in a very specific mood to watch it.
I'll be honest with you. I'd be down to watch it again with you if you haven't seen it. Like by myself, it's not a movie I want to watch by myself.
Yeah, exactly.
But like with you, because it's like really interesting to talk about afterwards.
Okay.
So it's worth watching just for that.
Well, maybe we have a podcast about it.
You know what? Maybe we should. Yeah. Maybe we could get Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He's just crazy enough to do it.
True. But he hasn't been responding to my texts.
Okay, well, that's a problem.
How about this? We have a podcast where we play the movie. They all just listen in with us. We'll call it
Mystery Science Theater 4000. I remember what I was going to say now.
Damn.
As I was saying earlier, you know, we have to, who was it that said, I saw the crown of England lying in the mud and I picked it up. Was that the first Tudor?
I don't know.
Henry Tudor. It may have been Henry Tudor. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is if we don't make an effort to not use the language our enemies use, then in subtle ways, we allow their ideas to infect our own. And so, you know, we've had this long conversation about what idealism means and how it was defined as, and we've looked at it and talked about it. And I think we have a firm grasp that you're not an idealist in the sense that is meant, generally speaking, nowadays. Mm-hmm. And so continuing to use that word continues to give life to that idea.
Okay. I would have, about a year ago, I probably would have pushed back on that. And I would have said, no, I'm taking it back. And I'll do it, and little by little, one person I talk to each time. An impossible task, and not really worth it. But we've had conversations similar to that. And actually, Tim Pool is actually, not just Tim Pool, but Jordan Peterson, Joe Rogan, a lot of them are like, you know, if you need something to die, stop talking about it.
Right.
Right. And so I can agree with that. I'll come up with my own word.
You can do that, or you can find an old word for what that, because I'm sure there is a word.
Yeah.
That,
whatchamacallitism.
Right. Or whatever. And so you find that word and then you use it and you know what happens. People are like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And then you get to talk about it. And sure, it's an old idea, but all ideas are old ideas. There are no, there are no new ideas under the sun. What you're really saying is, you know what? In times like this, I think this idea is what we need. This is tried and true. We've seen how this works.
Yeah.
But it's also, people have confused it with this thing that they mean. Ah, it doesn't mean that. It means this specific thing. Like, oh, I really want to get behind that. Yeah. And so you actually then introduce memetics into your idea. You're not piggybacking off someone else's meanings and therefore having to submit to their understanding of it. You're creating your own new one. And who knows? You never know what's going to blow up. Maybe, you know, like, listen, Roman Catholic apparel is going to happen. You know that something, you never know when something mimetic is just going to go explode. But in order to be mimetic, it has to be, and you have to introduce the idea in an interesting way.
What is mimetic?
What is mimetic?
Yeah, I've never heard that word in my life.
Oh, heavens, we need to do a podcast on mimetics then. Well, originally mimetics has to do with how DNA passes on genes and how there's recurring themes.
Oh, okay, sure.
But then also it applies, I mean, in a very broad sense, it's science-y part of it I'm not so strong on. But it basically is the question of like, well, why is Pepe so popular and why can't the left meme? Well, because memes are something that touches on our subconscious, that it literally reverberates with us. It communicates with pictures what 10,000 words couldn't communicate to you. It could capture moods and feelings and things that encode a lot of different information into one image or brief series of images, which can evoke more in what you think and feel than, okay. So then what makes something mimetic is how well it reverberates with people.
Sure.
Like if something reverberates with people, it becomes popular. And if something becomes popular through mimetics, you know that it actually represents the truest expression of their subconscious will. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you can actually determine and identify what people want based on their mimetics, because it's in essence a mental act instead of a thought.
Wow. That's fascinating. And to that basic idea, it makes 100% sense that liberals can't meme because they don't have truth.
Right.
They have nothing that reverberates.
Their entire deal is protecting themselves from reality. So you can't meme because what you're actually, when they're trying to meme, they're trying to build a force field.
Yeah.
And when we meme, we're trying to actually touch on the truth. That's why they hate it. That's why they get really upset about it.
Well, that's fascinating. That's really cool. I didn't put any real thought process into why they can't meme, but now that's fascinating.
I did think about it.
Well, obviously you think about a lot, everything to do with political sphere and its connections and various side roads and back alleys that you like to go down.
Oh yeah, I love those back
alleys. All right, we're ending now.
I think that's right. Yeah, I think we're about an hour.
Time isn't the important.
Is linear.
It's like on this spot, first off, before we go, homework for the listeners, based off of what I was like saying tonight, go find me an old word that I can use as my new belief system when defining it.
I have a suggestion.
I'm sure you do.
Peckerwood.
Huckleberry.
I'm a realistic Huckleberry.
Dingleberry. No, somebody else already like that.
Nice.
Oh, it's a joke. Pay off of the old.
I know, and then man. I'm playing the straight man.
Oh, okay, whatever. You often take my joke. Never mind. The second thing. Honestly, I'd like us to just don't worry about time. It's just when the conversation seems to be done, we close it. That can be 40 minutes. That can be an hour and a half. It could be an hour. I don't care so much about what the time is in there.
Fair enough. I wanted to hit a more or less consistent 55 to 105 because it really does make a difference. It's like price points. If you think about time, there's like time points too. You're like, oh, well, I can afford $20. I can afford 20 minutes, but I can't afford 120. So I can do 100, maybe 120. So I'm just, you know, trying to like hit that price point, as it were. But anyway, yes, we're done now. We love you. And we're happy to have you. And we're still working on our sign-off phrases, clearly.
You're still bald. I'm still not blonde, black, but I do have black hair.
I like that. Maybe that's the way we end it. I'm still bald. Ben's still not.
There's that, too. Until the day when we sign off. You're still bald. And now I am, too.
And I tell you, it looks really weird when a blonde goes bald.
You're such a...